Good morning. Today is Thursday, February the 18th, right smack dab in the middle of President's Week. Who better to join us than Mr. Van Fleck? Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
There's so many other places you could be too, right?
Oh, well, you know what? Not anymore, because I feel like I'm just glued to my office. I commute virtually from meeting to meeting.
Ah, does that mean you have dinner virtually also and you're losing weight?
Well, you know, there's a saying that you're going to come out of COVID as either a hunk, a chunk, or a drunk. And I've got two of the three. And the problem is I've got the wrong two of the three.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll just take the never mind. I won't respond.
You're going to take a fifth?
Yeah. All righty. Ever wonder why X's at the end of a letter signifying kisses? I know you always spell your name out completely on a Valentine's Day card. I got it.
I was just going to say if my X's signified kisses, my wife would be very concerned.
Right. Well, you know, and then you wouldn't be signing your Valentine's Day cards, Superintendent Fred Van Fleck, either.
I have absolutely, unless it has something to do with your lips and making a kissing, but they don't really make X's. You got me on this one. I don't know.
All right. In the Middle Ages, when people were unable to read or write, documents were often signed using an X. The X or cross was viewed by many as a sign of St. Andrew, and it represented a secret oath to fulfill the obligations specified in that document. In the same way, many people now kiss the Bible when taking an oath. They then kissed the signature X to affirm their sincerity. Eventually, the X and the kiss became synonymous, and the X was used as a symbol for a kiss in correspondence. Now you know.
Yep. I wasn't even close.
No. But, you know, you still are almost qualifying to be in your Middle Ages. So you got 10% on that.
Well, actually, the unfortunate reality of that is we got into a discussion at our dinner table here a week or so ago, and my daughter so politely informed my wife and I that we were too old for our Middle Ages.
Oh, really? And you cut her off at dessert?
No. We tried to argue with her a little bit, and we just let it go.
Yeah. You kind of forgot what the conversation was all about and went off afterwards, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, well, there may be a grain of truth in there. So what is going on when you hear some of the discussions, like in Chicago, or the president talking about wanting to get people back in school and, you know, all that kind of stuff? Do you kind of just scratch your head and wonder what school district they're looking at or why they aren't already there?
Well, I'll tell you, the most frustrating piece about this whole thing is that the bar keeps getting moved. As far as what it looks like when you open up. And let me give you an example.
Drunk, hunk, or chunk, right?
Of where we're at right now. That is, even if we wanted to open Eureka High School right now, we can't. California Department of Public Health has said, if you are in a purple region and your school has not opened or never started to open, you cannot open it. Thankfully, our elementary schools and our middle schools have already started the opening process, so we're going to be able to reopen those. And so Eureka High School and Zoe Barnum High School cannot open until we've had five consecutive days as a red county. And here's the interesting thing that goes along with that is you look to our neighbors of the south, the Fortuna High Schools and the Ferndale High Schools, they're all exempt from it because they were open. And so why is it, if our school board decides that it's time to open and we're ready to open, that decision's been taken away from them?
Now, is there something in place already, Fred, that is going to kick in as soon as it goes out of purple down to pick a color, that the calendar starts and you've got a standing order already that once it changes, you want it, you send off the letter or do the notification or whatever it is, and then at the end of the 5 days, you can open, and then you can stay open regardless of what the color is?
Well, I'll tell you what, where we're at right now, as far as the opening pieces, the board gave direction back in the beginning of January that we can open as soon as the vaccines have been received by staff, first and second dose, and they'd be reached their full efficacy. And so last weekend, Valentine's Day weekend, is going to be our date for everyone having the first dose available to them. And so we've got to get through the second dose now, and it depends on whether you are the Moderna or the Pfizer. Moderna is a 28-day period. Pfizer's a 21-day period. And then there's a 7 to 14-day period after that. And so I suspect that the board will provide us the exact date that they're saying this is the date that we believe that the efficacy of the shots are in place, and they'll tell us this is the day we're going to open. And so if you kind of do the math off of that, providing that the second dose hits that 21 or 28-day mark, and meaning that there's enough available, and I think that there's going to be, that puts us opening school likely
Easter week,
sometime late March. It'll be March.
You sure?
Yeah. So if you do the math, it'll likely be the week of March, and it's right tail end, likely be the week of March 29th.
Okay. And Easter is the 4th of April.
Yeah. So I guess that would you're be... right. Technically, it is Easter week. So,
and are you guys normally open Easter week, or is that a week that you're closed?
No, we're open.
Okay.
Our spring break this year doesn't come until April. We don't follow Easter for our spring break. We try to divide up the semester. And so, the semester, or however you want to look at it, the time that we have between the President's Week, which is this week, and the end of the school year, and we put spring break in the middle of that. So spring break for us this year is the week of April 19th.
But in order for that to trigger, the county still has to be non-purple.
Not for our elementaries and middle schools. We can go because they were opened at one point.
Are the high school teachers?
In fact, I've already been working with County Public Health, asking them to work with California Department of Public Health in this issue. What if we have our staff vaccinated? Can we open even if we're in purple? And so far, the answer has been no. However, rules change often in Sacramento, so that may change around.
Right.
One of the instances is folks who have the vaccine.
Hang on. You're on a roll. We got a break. We'll be back.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, before the break, you were talking about making an application, I guess, through the local level to see that if the staff had all gone through the paces, had the test, had the waiting time afterwards, the vaccines, the whole nine yards, that you would be able possibly to reopen the high school if the board determined that that was what they wanted to do.
The board has already determined that. So that's the current direction from the board.
Okay.
So if the staff is vaccinated, they want to open.
So you just got to wait for us to come out of purple then for 5 days.
I'm hopeful, and I'm pushing on this and reaching out to our local representatives on the state level, and these are all things that I'm talking about with them. Just as I talked about vaccinations to teachers, one of the things that I'm really proud of is Humboldt County is going to be one of the leaders in the state as far as all their teachers being vaccinated. We're probably at this point, as I said, first dose done with our teachers. I would venture to say we're one of only five counties that's anywhere even close to where we're at right now in the entire state. Many counties haven't even started vaccinating teachers at all. And so that's a true, and when I say teachers, I should put a qualifier there. I'm saying that loosely. That's all of our staff.
Right.
So that's a true thing that we should be proud of up here.
Now, is that because the others are a little slow, or the designation of the priority? How come Humboldt's so far ahead?
Well, I think it's a couple of reasons. Number one, in Humboldt County, they prioritized teachers and educational staff, group one, which are those folks who are teaching in person, in the same priority as 75 and over. And then group two, which is everybody else who are not teaching in person, but they will be teaching in person, assumably once they're vaccinated, with everyone that's over 70. And so that's factor number one. Factor number two is we're a smaller county, and so it gives us the ability to shift quicker and adapt quicker to vaccinations coming in. And so we're able to get out and get that taken care of. I actually, last week, when I qualified as a group two educator, went down, got my first dose of the vaccine, and did that at St. Joseph Hospital. And I was incredibly impressed with the program they had in place over there. They have it organized. It's systemic. I mean, they have it set up. And you go in, you get your shot, and you get out. And it's quick and efficient. So,
well, that's about all you can hope for in that kind of scenario, as long as, you know, we keep getting the vaccines pumped into the county. I mean, that's probably the biggest variable at this point, don't you think?
It is. And we've been on a track, from what I hear, of about 3,000 vaccinations per week coming into the county. So if you start running down some of those numbers, as far as educators, Eureka City Schools specifically, we had about 525 educators that needed to be vaccinated. And you look across the county for K-12 schools, you're talking probably in the neighborhood of about 3,500 vaccinations needed for that group. And so we're certainly on track there. And then my understanding is there's about 10,000 over 75s that need to be vaccinated, and then another 16,000, 65 to 75 in our county to be vaccinated. So that 3,000 mark per week, if that holds true, I think we'll start getting us some pretty big dents inside of those vaccines. But we also have to remember we have to have a second dose as well.
Right. Well, just simple math, which is, you know, my forte, nothing complicated. That's about 45 weeks to get through the entire population one time. That doesn't sound like we're really dialed in on this one, you know, if it's going to take a year.
My understanding, though, I am speaking out of my expertise now. I can, what I've said so far, I know a little bit about, but where we go in this direction, I'm only going off of what I'm hearing coming out of Sacramento, and what I hear on the news. This portion is just a real step up in the amount of vaccines that will be available. And so there's been a prediction by Dr. Fauci that vaccines will be widely available end of April into May, but it will take us the summer to get all those vaccines distributed out amongst all of our population. So looking from a school perspective, that's good news, because that gets us that vaccination prior to school starting up next fall.
Now, yesterday, Supervisor Rex was in, and he had shared some of the concerns that he's had people express to him about their kids not socializing with other kids. You know, that the separation thing, not being able to be with other, et cetera, is really starting to weigh down the psyche, if you will, of a lot of the elementary school, junior high school age kids. Are you starting to sense the same thing? And does the school district have any flexibility to be able to do some things for those kids, even if the schools aren't open?
So we are, and what we're doing right now as a school district, we actually have hundreds of kids on our campuses every day.
Right.
Not this week, because it's President's Week, but normally we have hundreds of kids. And here's a group of students that are on our campus. We have our students with disabilities who are in self-contained classrooms. We have intervention classes happening across campus. Across the district. We have what we are calling learning pods, where students who have difficulties with connection at home, or there's some social emotional reason, or there's some extenuating reason why they need to be in person in school, where they can come in person in school, and we're providing learning for them. We also have our equipment dependent classes, and you know, so think shop class, think classes that have specialty software that they need in order to teach a class. Those are happening in person after school in small groups. And then we also have all of our clubs and sports. If they go through the process of filling in their safety protocols, they're eligible to be in person as well. And so we're really stepping into getting more folks on our campuses. And I think a lot of people don't realize that we actually have hundreds of students on our campus each week and hundreds of staff members on our campus.
Well, you do if you drive by the parking lots and you can see that. But then I'd have to be paying attention to the parking lot instead of driving ahead, which doesn't make too much sense either. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka City School Superintendent Fred Van Fleck. Talk shop is presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Baywood Golf and Country Club, and Murphy's Markets. Fred, with the lull that there has been with the attendance at the high school, have you had a chance to take that opportunity and either start with the gym, start doing some of the work down at the bottom of the hill, doing something as long as there's not that many students on site?
Well, let's start with the gym. Great news on that front. It's finally moving ahead. We're putting together our bid package right now. We believe it's going to take at least 4 weeks for contractors to put their bids together. And so by the time the bid package hits the street, they put their bid packages together. We're anticipating the board approving a bid and a successful contractor for the gym project right around the 1st of April. So then the project will take off, and then we're anticipating completion in the fall of 2022 of the gym project. And then following that fall of 2022, completion of the gym project immediately on its heels, the abatement demolition of the existing gym, and then the building of the new parking lot right there. And so our hope truly is to have the gym ready for volleyball season, but worst case scenario, ready for basketball season for the winter sports of 2022.
Oh, and congratulations, by the way, on the demolition of Jacobs.
Finally happened. It's only taken, I've been here finishing up 9 years now, and it started before me. It's just been crazy. The neighborhood is very happy about what's going on over there. And there's been a lot of questions of folks out there. So what's happening there next? And so there's two agencies that are in negotiations on that property, CHP, City of Eureka. The board has yet to determine if they're going to sell it for sure yet, because here's the scenario. One of our, obviously, flagship projects is the gymnasium building, and it's really going to depend on what that bid comes in. If that bid comes in on budget, it's probably not likely we're going to sell that Jacobs property, just because once you sell real property, you'll never get it back. And if you think of the school district, we were once 8,000 students. We're now 3,600 students. Housing hasn't changed here. What certainly has changed is industry. And so if I was to read the tea leaves, do I think we're going to go back to an 8,000 student school district in the next 10 years? I think it's highly unlikely. However, you go out 20 years, 30 years, who knows? And I would hate to make a decision now on selling a piece of property unless we have to, that could impact the school district and the community 20, 30 years down the road.
On the other hand, to sit on something and not realize any kind of return on it, on the hopes that something might happen or down the road sometime, possibly, I don't know. I would probably be a contrarian on your board, but I understand you probably have one or two of those already, so I don't need to weigh in.
and what I'd say that the interesting thing about school district is it doesn't cost us anything to sit on a piece of land other than to go out and mow it, because we don't have property taxes on it or anything like that. We just have the upkeep.
You don't have insurance? What's the insurance on something like that? Just sitting there as a in a neighborhood.
I actually don't think it will impact our insurance at all when that building's gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're in the JPA, and I
oh, okay, okay.
I could get this told. I'm not sure. That's a really interesting question. I'm going to have to ask that question on how that will impact that, but I'm pretty sure it will not, which is unfortunate. But anyway, that's the Jacobs Project. We are obviously concerned about transient populations. Once the buildings are gone, we're concerned about it when they're there. But we obviously don't want that to turn into Campground Eureka.
Right. Well, and the city just made that determination, what, the council 2 weeks ago, about not camping. Mm-hmm. This is goofy and stupid that even to have to ask the question, does that include school campuses in that determination, or is it just city-owned property?
I don't know the answer to that question either. We certainly don't allow camping on any of our school properties, and the nice thing is we're around a lot and we see it. We do have a couple campuses, one in particular, the Winsler campus, where we have repeat offenders come in and we have to chase them off quite often, and we have to work on that. But I'll tell you, you want to know what the scary thing is to me? Is the pickup and hypodermic needles seen on our campuses. If you would have asked me 3 years ago, do you have a problem with hypodermic needles on your campuses or around, I would have told you no. Once in a great while, they're there. We had some problems on the Jacobs soccer field there once in a while. But for whatever reason, people really stayed away from our schools. That's not being so much so anymore. And I don't know if that's tied with less students being on our schools. And so more of the population who are using needles are coming on our campuses, but we're seeing an uptick in needles and paraphernalia being left around that's been happening here as of late, and it's very concerning.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, you talked a little bit about the Jacobs situation. Okay. You talked a little bit about the gymnasium situation at the high school. Okay. I guess the big ball in the middle of the room is the football, baseball, the athletic canyon, if you will. Any progress there? Is the cleanup starting to get rid of the old ag paraphernalia?
Progress, yes. Progress to my satisfaction, no. And so I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of this. We were hoping when we went through our environmental report that we would be able to file a categorical exemption on the environmental piece, and we are not going to be able to do that. And so that's probably going to add about 6 months to the process. We believe we're going to be able to file a what's called a mitigated negative declaration, where we'll have to go through a portion of the process, but we won't have to do a full-blown environmental impact report. And so there's a whole lot of jargon there that I just dropped. And so the bottom line is we have to do mitigation for the wetlands that are down there, and we'll have to replace every wetland that has been discovered in a ratio of somewhere between at least 1-to-1, but more likely closer to 3-to-1. We are also having...
Wait a minute. The whole thing is fill, right? Except
the whole thing is fill.
So where's the... Are you talking about mud puddles on the surface of the fill that they're going to claim as wetlands?
That's correct. Anything where certain types of grasses have started to grow in, they relabel as wetlands.
And I don't suppose
whether it's man-made or not. And so if you think about that, the irony of this is the reason we're having to replace a field is because we have a failed drainage system. You have a failed drainage system, you have lots of puddling. And so we've created all our own wetland down there through the failed drainage system that we now have to mitigate and replace at a minimum of 1-to-1, but more likely in the 2 or 3-to-1 category.
I suppose it's too late to resod?
Yep. The next piece that we have to mitigate is the bird nesting time. And so the birds nest during a certain time, I believe it's April through August. And so we have to have mitigating factors in there for the bird nesting and making sure that we're not disturbing any birds that are migratory and coming through there, because there's a lot of brush that's on the side of those hills, especially down by Bud Cloney Baseball Field where the birds potentially nest. The next piece we have to mitigate is there's some endangered species of plants that are on the hillside there. Really interesting, because those endangered species of plants, the reason they've been able to thrive is because of our maintenance upkeep there. They like the weed eater. They like to be mowed. But we do have to rope off those particular areas to make sure that we don't disturb those. And then finally, the last piece that we have to mitigate is the historical perspective of the ag building that's down there and the historical perspective of the team room that is down there, because we are not actually doing much to the bleachers themselves. Those won't fall underneath that.
So is that like the Historical Society or those folks that go around that you had some discussion with about the current gym?
Yep, exactly. And so who it is Eureka Heritage Society that we're working with on that, and talking with them about the specific measures that we need to do in the process. And I commend the Heritage Society. They've been willing to work with us. They're talking with us. We're coming up with things that we can do that are creative and nice to preserve some of that heritage and yet move the process forward in using modern building supplies and redoing those buildings down there to get them to a state that they need to be in.
I thought the old ag building was basically falling apart, or that the soil underneath it had sloughed off and was gone.
That's accurate. The ag building will be torn down, and we've been working with them on that, on what the proper documentation is of that building. So it is photographed properly, documented properly. So anyone that wants to see the historical significance of that in the future, there'll be an archive of that building. And the reality of it is there is no foundation left underneath that building. It's been condemned and it can't be fixed. And so we're really left with no other alternative but the demolition of that building.
Well, at least that'll speed the process up a little bit. Hopefully next month we'll get some updates that, you know, maybe some dirt's been done and some things are moving and wood's been cut and all that kind of good stuff. Thanks for coming by.
That would be good. That'd be good.
Enjoy your President's Week.
Well, thank you. You as well.
All righty, bud. See ya. See everybody tomorrow morning.